This is SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. I'm Felicia Eady. Almost three decades of South Carolina history will soon go back inside boxes and sit on shelves. Items that make up the Justice for All, South Carolina, and the American Civil Rights Movement exhibit consist of audio and video recordings, photographs and newspaper clippings, postcards, diaries, even manuscripts. They will sit inside quality control storage at several libraries at the University of South Carolina, and they will stay there until another opportunity comes around for them to be shared with the public. These items have been on display since February. The exhibit closes this week. Dr. Bobby Donaldson is a history professor at the university and director of the school's Center for Civil Rights History and Research. We are talking in his office, surrounded by submitted documents, pieces of history that could one day be a part of this exhibit and many others here at the university. Dr. Donaldson, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Congratulations on a successful exhibit. It's been available to the public now for a little over 6 months. Who's coming to see these items?
We have had many groups of elementary and middle school students who've come to the exhibit. We've had a number of senior groups from community centers and churches to see the exhibit. And it's both awe and surprise, and some have been disturbed by what they've seen. Some have been shocked at much had occurred in South Carolina, and they were not altogether familiar with it or had never been taught some of the material. Many people have been surprised about how much material we actually have housed at the university's libraries.
The items that make up this exhibit come from 50 different collections at various libraries here at the university. What do people see when they come?
This is an exhibit of archives. So it's not an exhibit you would normally see in a museum. But you will see photographs of civil rights. You will see letters about the civil rights movement. You will see newspaper articles about the civil rights movement. You will see moving images from the civil rights era. So we have old footage from WIS television, for example, or local television station in Charleston about events. And you'll also listen to oral interviews of people and their memories of what transpired during the civil rights movement.
Side by side, the items weave together South Carolina's stories from this time period. Many of these stories are largely untold or not as well known as others. Which story or stories have emerged as the most shocking or the most telling to visitors?
So we have on display a booklet that is very difficult to read because of the fine print. But the takeaway of the fine print is that in 1868, there is a new state constitution that is drafted and approved, one that is written largely by African Americans during the Reconstruction era. And this state constitution was very path-breaking in so many respects, including in the field of public education. It helped to shape the public education system in South Carolina. And that constitution said that any state institution receiving state funding should be open to all residents without regard to race or color. So you have that document, and that document is next to a photograph of students enrolled at the South Carolina Normal School on the campus of the University of South Carolina. So these are students living and studying on the campus of the University of South Carolina who decades earlier were either enslaved people or free people of color living under slavery. And right next to that, you have a photograph of a young man named Richard T. Greener, who is a professor at the University of South Carolina from 1873 to 1877. He is an African American. He is the first African American graduate of Harvard College and the first African American that we know of to serve on the faculty of the university. And right next to his photograph is a diploma from 1876 that is awarded to Richard T. Greener. So Greener, in addition to being the librarian and a professor at the University of South Carolina, is also a student who receives his law degree from our university in 1876. It is the only degree from the Reconstruction era in any archives in the country. So when the university integrates for the first time, you have students who are being admitted, but you're also having students who are leaving in direct resistance to what is happening. And a lot of faculty also resign. And so we estimate that between 85 and 90% of the student body of the University of South Carolina was African American. And again, you're talking about a few hundred students at the time. And yet, until recent times, not much about who they were, what they experienced, have been documented. That is now different. There are a number of archival collections that talk about the experience of those individuals. There's more material now about Richard T. Greener as well.
Themes explored include voting rights, educational justice, desegregation, all issues that we still deal with today. Do you see this exhibit playing a role, at least here in South Carolina, in conversations about these issues today?
I think this history is instructive not only because it sheds light on what transpired in South Carolina, the nation, generations earlier, but it also highlights and clarifies where we are today. In terms of some of the ongoing issues of racial injustice, some of the ongoing tensions along the resegregation of public schools, the inequities in public housing, the inequities in health care, the inequities in the criminal justice system. And I think to grapple with these critical social issues, one needs to be very well versed in the history to understand how we evolved to this place. When one now hears the resurgence of white nationalist rhetoric in this country, even in the present day. I mean, I can take you now to a case in the exhibit, and when you read it, you read something you think was said yesterday, when in fact it was said in 1954.
Earlier, you mentioned the range and ages of people that come to see Justice for All. How do you see this exhibit impacting the younger audience?
One, they know Jim Crow segregation. They know of Martin Luther King Jr. They know of Rosa Parks. But many of them do not know the critical role younger people played in transforming this country. And so you see that. You see young people sitting down at lunch counters and challenging segregation in theaters. But you also see their writings. You see them imagining what the future could be or should be. And it's so important, I think, for people who engage in social activism today to document that so that it can be chronicled and recorded in the future. I mean, we're fortunate that there were individuals who had the foresight to save a pamphlet, to save a flyer, to save a letter. And one of the items in the exhibit that stands out is a letter a mother saves. And the mother's name was Ethel Bolden. She was a librarian. And Ms. Bolden has an extensive collection here at our University's South Carolina Library. And she saved items from her children. And when one of her sons was in the eighth grade, he was tasked to write an essay about what I want to be when I grow up. And the young man said that I want to be an engineer, but I'm mindful that I cannot study engineering at the University of South Carolina because of segregation. And then he says, but one day things will change because already he sensed a movement in the air. And that young man writes this letter in 1959. Well, later that young man is appointed the commander of NASA by Barack Obama. And the young man is named Charles Bolden Jr. And he gets his degree later from the University of Southern California and also from the Naval Academy. But what's striking about Bolden is Bolden's mother saved that material. And so now it adds a very different context of this young man who is the first African-American head of NASA, who in 1959 had a vision about how he would get there. And part of that vision included challenging segregation in South Carolina. So now Charles Bolden Jr.'s papers joined the papers of his mother, Ethel Bolden. And I think that is what the lure was for him to give his papers to the South Carolina, is that he wanted his papers to be next to his mother.
The third-ranking Democrat in the United States House of Representatives, Congressman James Clyburn, will be the speaker at the exhibit's closing event this week. He's not seen this exhibit, but he's a part of it.
So Congressman James Clyburn is part of the reason why we've done this exhibit. So Congressman Clyburn is the most powerful Democratic leader in the state. Congressman Clyburn was born in Sumter. While in Sumter, he was a young leader of the NAACP in Sumter, and was very active in demonstrations in Orangeburg. while a student at South Carolina State. And he builds on that in his career. He was also a social studies teacher in Charleston. And when the university approached him about bringing his congressional papers to be housed in our South Carolina political collections, he very smartly said that I want my papers to be in a place where they'll be used for teaching and research and for public outreach. And so in 2015, upon that request, the College of Arts and Sciences and the university's libraries formed a new Center for Civil Rights History and Research that I now direct. And part of our task was to help build these types of collections so that they could be used, not simply to be just housed here, but they could be used to advance research, they could be used to enhance teaching, and they could be used to educate the broader public.
What's been the most memorable moment in this process for you?
It's actually been pretty remarkable. I'm a historian. I was trained in archives and rare books in my graduate school years. You work to put these items on display, and then you kind of watch to see how it comes together. And I think in nearly every respect, this exhibit has exceeded our expectations in terms of the lessons it imparts, but also how it has galvanized interest and sparked memories of people. And so just today, a lady came in from Sumter, and she told me her father's name, and it kind of rung a bell. And as they were touring the exhibit, I came back to my office to confirm what I thought I knew. And I went back out and I said, when did your father graduate from Booker T. Washington High School here in Columbia? And she said, well, I think sometime in the late 20s and early 30s. And I said, would it have been the class of 1928? And I mentioned some names of people who were in that class. She said, I think that's it. I said, well, come with me. And I took her to a case and I said, this is a photograph of the class of 1928. And she said, well, there's Daddy right there in the middle. Now for us, it was just a photograph from class of 28, but now we have more to that. Yesterday we had someone touring the exhibit. They were visiting from New York, and she was joined by her grandmother, and her grandmother said, that is your grandfather's mother in that photograph standing in line to vote. And the woman in the photograph is standing in line to vote with her finger across her chin looking at the camera. And so the great-granddaughter says, I want to take a picture like that. So she stands in front of her great-grandmother, strikes the same pose. And we have this wonderful juxtaposition of a 9-year-old standing next to a picture taken in 1948. That picture is significant because that photograph is the first time African Americans could vote in the Democratic Party since Reconstruction. It is a picture taken 2 years after a man named George Elmore files a lawsuit against the white Democratic Party of South Carolina. And so this 9-year-old takes that with her. And I think that has been, for many of us, what has been most rewarding, to have people come in this library, they see an item, they see a letter, they see a photograph that is directly connected to their own experience, their own family, or their own church. And it's been quite powerful to see that connection take place within these four walls.
What happens when the exhibit closes? What's next?
When this exhibit comes to an end, we will very carefully put those items back in the boxes and the folders on the shelves in climate control storage where they have been housed. And we're mindful that that is not the answer most people want to hear when that question is raised. And so the university is working very actively to come up with some other possibilities for this material to have a second life. We're working now to develop a traveling exhibit that will leave the university and go to various libraries and museums around the state and elsewhere. But the university is also working to develop a campaign to develop a permanent structure on the campus that will be used as a showplace for these items and also a showplace where these items can be used for course instruction, for research, and for public outreach.
Dr. Bobby Donaldson, history professor and director of the University of South Carolina's Center for Civil Rights History and Research. A Justice for All digital exhibit has been created by University Libraries Digital Collections as a complement to the physical exhibit. It is available on their website. For SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org, I'm Felicia Eady.